Craft, a Culture and Conversations family. I'm your host, Jameson Smallwood, and I'm about to make you part of the conversation. Hey guys, thank you for downloading. Thank you guys for sharing. Thank you guys for listening to Culture and Conversations. Before we get too far into the episode, please go by your favorite podcasting platform, whether that's iTunes, Spotify, or otherwise. And if you can, leave me a 5-star review letting people know that Culture and Conversations is worth a listen. Up next on Culture and Conversations, this is part 2 of my series on dealing with and healing from divorce. I have a great guest. Her name is Simone Pitts. And Simone decided to stop by and be part of the conversation to share her experiences going through her divorce and how she came out on the other side a better person. Up next on Culture and Conversations. Hey guys, I'm Jameson Smallwood, and yes, this is Culture and Conversations. I'm just in a great mood right now, so I want you guys out there to experience that same euphoria that I feel right now. So I hope you guys are doing as well as I'm doing. Up next on Culture and Conversations, and we're going to continue my interview series that I've been doing on divorce, talking with individuals who volunteered from my social media network to talk to me about divorce. They share their experiences going through divorce and how they healed from their divorce. So up next on Culture and Conversations, we have another one of those great interviews, my friend Simone Pitts. She stops by to share her experience about what she went through dealing with divorce and how she came out on the other side and healed from divorce. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode of Culture and Conversations. Welcome to Culture and Conversations. I put together a show idea a while ago talking about divorce, and I reached out to people on my friends list on Facebook to see if there would be anybody who wanted to share their experience on Culture and Conversations, because a lot of people were responding saying that it was a good idea to talk about divorce and how to heal from divorce and what that process is like. So one of the people who reached out was my friend Simone Pitts, and I reached out to Simone to bring her onto Culture and Conversations to make her a part of the conversation. Hey Simone, how are you doing?
Hello.
Perfect, perfect, perfect. So, Simone, you decided to share your story with me on Culture and Conversations, and I appreciate that. So before I even ask you any questions, let me thank you, and thank you on behalf of my listeners for being a part of the show.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
So tell me about your view of marriage before you got married. What did you think marriage was before you actually entered into marriage?
Oh, I was the, let's see, wide-eyed, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, like, oh, this is going to be great. Yay, picket fence, 2 kids, we're never going to argue, we're going to have a great time, travel here and there, and do this and that, and no problems at all. Oh, no, 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 it doesn't work out like that. It doesn't work out like that at all. My view was, you know, the typical, you know, I would call it the typical chick view. Like, we're like, okay, this is going to be great. I'm marrying a guy that I really love, and this is fantastic. And once the wedding is over, then we'll do this, and we'll have this step and this step and this step. Now, those steps still happened, but it was some rough, interesting things within those steps. It was kind of like jumping from rock to rock and falling in between the rocks, but crawling back up the rock, getting onto the next step, still standing on 1 foot, a little shaky, jumping to the next rock, falling down again. So all the steps happened, but they just happened in such a, like, a just bad way. I'll put it that way. So like I said, my view was, of course, you know, what everyone thinks marriage should be and how it's going to be, and it's going to be easy. And, of course, you know, you have the old heads who say, oh, you remember, marriage is work, and, you know, stay in church and keep God first and things like that, which
yep.
is what we did and how we started, which did not go quite the way it should have gone. I tell people, a lot of people don't know this, but for my marriage, we had I know you just kind of heard, I don't know if everybody's heard in the news or what's going on with with Cardi B and what's his name, Offset?
Okay.
How they had a secret marriage and things like that. It's like, oh, we've been married for this amount of time.
What?
Yeah, that's what we did. That's what we did. We were married months before the actual wedding.
Okay.
And a lot of people didn't know about it. But that was due to us doing marriage counseling through the church and things like that, and we were living together, they were like, oh, you guys can't live together. You cannot live together and before you get married and things like that. So it was pretty much forced, like, okay, we got to get married. So it's kind of like a courthouse wedding, which was real. I mean, we did nice and everything, but no one was there. It was just me and him.
Sure.
Literally. So we didn't tell many people at all. So, like I said, it started kind of forced. It just got really, really strange and just went really, it went left, let's put it that way. So my view of what it was really not what it was. And I was young, so.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a really common story with how we often see marriage. I thought marriage was going to be, I knew marriage would be going to be work, but I also thought it was going to be a lot more blissful and happy. Right. And like you said, all the bubbly stuff, you know, and, I thought I was just going to have a wife. I thought I was going to have my life and then just add a wife to it. And it didn't, you know, obviously that wasn't, it's more to that. You have to actually make room. You know, I'm not even going to say make room in your life for somebody else. You have to actually build a brand new life with a whole another human being, you know?
Right.
And, it's complicated. You described the church. Would you say that part of the challenge in your marriage was that there were outside influences? You don't have to go into any specifics, but would you characterize some of the challenges that you face in your marriage as being outside influences?
I would say at the beginning, there was definitely that outside influence of, okay, we're supposed to do this, but we're not doing it. And is what we're doing really that bad? And okay, maybe we should do it because they're telling us to do it. Okay, let's do it because we don't want to be like hated by God. And, you know, so, you know, it's almost like when you're doing this premarital counseling through the church, but you're not really, and you love the church you go to, but you don't know God the way that you should know God to know what to do. Let me put it that way. So it's like, okay, I'm going to church. I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to go to church every Sunday. I'm supposed to join the church and do this. So I was doing it, but it's almost like you were kind of going through the motions more than you were having a relationship with God. Let's put it that way.
You're going through
a checklist. Fearing God.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, okay, they said you're supposed to do this. We can't do this. You don't do this. So I would say that was the outside influence. But like I said, I can't say that was throughout the whole marriage. For the rest of the marriage, like I said, I was young. I was an only child for the longest time. Of course, I had brothers and sisters, stepbrothers, stepsisters, things like that. But I was spoiled. I'm not going to lie. Part of that was I was spoiled.
Mm.
And I believe that there were just things that were going on, such as other things that we had established outside of each other that we had going on that we weren't really ready to let go of and ready to move on from. So with that and trying to add all that into a marriage and kind of mix it in and stir it to make it work, it's like, okay, I'm trying my best to mix this oil in this water, but it's not coming together. So it was all, there was always something else. So there was always someone mad at the other one. And like I said, well, at the beginning, there may have been outside influences that started it.
Okay.
I think later on, it was definitely both of us that were just almost at the beginning, kind of not really willing to let go of our, not our single life, but our single lifestyle. Let me put it that way.
Your singleness. That's it.
Yes. There you go.
Because there's pieces of what you, there's obviously your life before you get married and the activities that you were, you know, you're talking about. But then there is the prioritization of those things, which is what I would categorize as singleness. The fact that, hey, I can do this whenever I want to with whoever I want to do it with. And that's tough because I think your experience isn't unique in that. I know when I was married, I had some moments like that with my ex-wife, and, you know, I would describe her as having some of the same feelings that you expressed there, where she had activities that she wanted to, you know, give a lot of time to. And, you know, and I'm kind of like, hey, you know, I need you home so I can spend time getting to know you and building this marriage. And, but in fairness to her, you know, I also had a lot of activities going on. You know, I was involved in my church really, you know, I was really involved in my church. I still am. But, you know, that's something she didn't necessarily understand the scope of until she actually started seeing that, no, when I put together these lessons that I have to teach, I'm going into my office and I'm closing the door and I'm going to spend an hour and a half in there working on this stuff. And it's going to take some time and you're going to have to find other stuff to do while I'm doing this. And, right. you know, it, and it just, it never got to the point where we learned how to really effectively work and love each other, given our commitments to these other parts of our lives. And, right. so yeah, it's not an uncommon thing, you know? So let me ask some other, let me ask, mm-hmm. I guess, a kind of a question here to get our conversation moving in a little bit different direction. So, you mm-hmm. know, well, let me go back and touch on something else here. One of the things you said too, that I think needs to be highlighted, and from a religious perspective, and I always tell people this disclaimer, it's almost a disclaimer, this is not a Christian podcast, but this is a podcast hosted by a Christian. So I do bring that perspective to it, to some conversation pieces. And, mm-hmm. you know, what you said there is a really common thing you have to, we constantly try to deal with in church, is that if you have a faith walk, a relationship with God, then you don't want to approach it as a bunch of do's and don'ts. And right. and it's tough because sometimes people who have a very earnest desire to please God, yet they may not have, to your point, the depth of understanding and the breadth of understanding around some of the topics that you're trying to please them in, then it turns into like, okay, what am I supposed to do? What am I not supposed to do? Who am I supposed to do it with? Who am I not supposed to do it with?
And exactly.
And when that checklist happens, it's just very natural to not to go through the motions and not understand the significance of what you're doing. And unfortunately, as much as that's something that you want to encourage people to understand and grow in their faith, the church, and I say this as the church as a whole, at large, we have mm-hmm. to do a better job of making sure people are understanding the values that you're trying to encourage them to honor in their relationship with God, more so than just, hey, do this and don't do that, because that doesn't help anybody when it's just a checklist. So, and I can totally right. understand your confusion and frustration with that. That's not a relationship. Yeah. That's just rules. So.
So right, and that's what it was, rules and regulations.
Yeah, yeah. And when you don't understand the value behind it, and you're not at a place mm-hmm. where you feel like, you know, like this is something you should be doing anyway, you don't really understand it, it's going to be hard yeah. to get to, it's going to be hard to feel like it's worth the sacrifice that you're making in those areas, you know?
Mm-hmm. So, you're absolutely correct.
So at what point, you know, you don't have to give me the specific, you know, maybe the specific incident or situation, but you know, mm-hmm. at some point, divorce came into the equation, and you started to contemplate it. Was it a fast decision? Like, okay, well, we've tried everything else, let's just get divorced. Or was it a sort of drawn out, you know, process where you maybe sort of backed into divorce, where it was like, okay, that wasn't the first, an eager option, but it was just an option where you decided that, you know what, this is what we've got, you know, to do here.
I think for me, it was kind of an easing into it. There were things going on, things kind of building up, and things that in my marriage, I wasn't as vocal as I am now outside of my marriage. So a lot of things would happen and I would kind of be quiet. More things would happen and I would just kind of sit quiet. Mm-hmm. And it was to a point where even some of my friends, of course, they didn't tell me until, you know, later on after the divorce and things like that. They're like, you know, when you're around him or when he comes around, when you're around us, it's like the normal Simone. But when he comes around or when he comes home or you're pulling up to the house or you hear the garage open, it's almost like you tense up, you tighten up, and you shut down. And I never realized I was doing that, like I said, until after, of course, the divorce and everything. Mm-hmm. I'm like, wow, I never noticed that. And it wasn't a physical fear or anything. It was just almost like that your shoulders get tight and you're like, oh, God, I have to deal with this again.
It's dread.
So it was like I said, it was things that were just adding up, and I guess in my head I wasn't adding them up, but it got to a point where I'm like, okay, enough is enough. Like, this isn't going to change. They're not going to change. I'm not willing to change for them or change in the way that they want me to change. It's like, okay, I want you to do this so that you can receive this. And that person's like, well, I need you to do this because I want this.
Okay.
So it was a back and forth thing and back and forth situation where it just got to the point of I was just miserable, like literally just miserable. Mm-hmm. Even, like I said, of course we had a daughter in the whole mix, but like I said, I'd just be happy to hang out with her. And she was one. excited to hang out with a 1-year-old. I'm like, it would just be me and her. We would do so many things together. It was just me and her, me and her, me and her. We would go to my mom's house. We would go to the store together. We would do this together. I was giving her a bath. I was doing this. It was just us, just, you know, me and her, and that was it. So I was like, okay, I got used to just me and her situation. So like I said, it was, there were things that added up to it, but it was a gradual add up and a build up to where I was like, okay, I'm done. Yeah. And when people know me, that know me, that know me, that know me, know that when I say I'm done,
you're done.
I'm done, and there's no turning back.
Yeah.
And like I said, when people, when they start to realize what was going on, or they realize what had happened, and how I just was emotionless throughout the entire situation, the entire process, they're like, even my mom was like, you just become a really cold-hearted person. I don't know. And I was kind of like, well, dang. Even my beautician was like, you were cutthroat. I was like, it's not that I'm cutthroat. It's after 5 years, you're like, I ain't got enough to give. I'm good.
Yeah. Deuces.
And I was perfectly fine. I guess everybody, I think people were expecting me to break down and have this emotional breakdown, which little did they know, I'd already had those.
Exactly.
Throughout the 5 years.
Yeah.
I had multiple emotional breakdowns, like by myself, with him in front of me. I'd had them. My friends didn't see them, but I had them. So
yeah.
I had so many, I'm like, I ain't got no more left. Literally. So I was good. So it was a gradual thing, but when it happened, it was snap, I'm done.
Yeah.
And I was fine. So, zombie mode.
Yeah. What people don't realize is that a lot of times what they see on the outside is after you've actually cleaned up yourself emotionally to present something on the outside. So,
correct.
You know, I never forget, I came home the last time I had this big sort of emotional moment. I came home. And, you know, let's see, I'm not gonna say I came home because that was another time before that, but basically my ex-wife, she left like 2 days after Valentine's Day and, you know, took all her stuff out of the house.
Wow.
And I came home and
she
had lied to me about what was going on. So like, you know, I called her that day, you know, I bought her 2 dozen roses for Valentine's Day and, trying to spark something romantic,
right,
and not, you know, confrontational. And
right, because it's Valentine's Day. It's Valentine's Day.
Exactly. Like, I wasn't even expecting to have sex. I was just like, you know, I know we are in a really bad place, and I just want you to know that I still love you, you know.
Right.
And even if you're mad at me and we don't understand how to get out of this spiral that we're in right now, at the end of the day, I don't want to go past Valentine's Day and not let you know that I love you, you know? And that's where my head was at. And I called her up. I never forget. It was a Friday. I called her up and, you know, I was talking to her on the way to work, and she was pretending like everything was cool. And I called her a couple more times after I was leaving the office, going to work, going home. And she wouldn't answer the phone. And I said, well, maybe she's just busy. Maybe she's just tied up, whatever. And I walk into the house and all her stuff's gone. I never forget that. That happened 2 days after Valentine's Day. And, you know, that hit, that hurt. That really hurt because it just was bad.
That should just disappear like that and just leave. That's, oh my goodness.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, in hindsight, right, maybe she felt that was the best way to handle it. That's her prerogative. And you know, I've since given her the benefit of the doubt yet again on that. I'm like, whatever she felt like she had to do, that's her prerogative. But I think for me, that was the moment the marriage was over. And even though, you know, and at that point I became like you, I just became hard and it really indifferent towards her. So, you know, I was mad, and I was really mad. And, you know, I was mad at myself. I was mad at her. And you know, being mad at myself was the hardest part to deal with because I'm the one who went and, you know, invited this person into a marriage and said, hey, will you marry me? And you know, but towards the end of it all, kind of wrapping up my piece of the story, is just that at the end, she came back home one more time and I just, you know, I saw just like what you said. She, you know, we were at a place where we weren't going to compromise. And I was like, no, you know, I'm not going to change. I'm not going to change my stance on marriage so that you can be happy with how you're behaving. So, you know, if you don't want to be home, if you don't want to be a wife, if you don't want to try and make our marriage work together, then you don't need to be home. and you don't need to be my wife. And I was really adamant about that. I was like, I can't do this by myself, in this house by myself. I can't fix a marriage by myself. If you don't want to commit to fixing it, then at this point, let's stop fighting each other and let's just finish up this divorce. And that's what happened, you know. So,
I get it. So
as much as this podcast is supposed to be about you, Simone, I'm giving.
we went through similar situations, and we found out about it. We're like, wait, you did that? Exactly. So we went through similar situations. We get it.
Yeah, it's tough, you know, and it's just tough because one of the things that is a common thread in, I think, all of these conversations that I've had about divorce with my guests and my friends, is that nobody wants divorce. And I think that's one of the things I really want the listeners to take away from these conversations. Not just that you're hearing these kind of behind the scenes stories of people's lives and you're just like, ooh, like the juicy bits or whatever. But that people, I hear it in your voice and how you describe it. And because I know you, you didn't want a divorce, mm-hmm. but it was just the inevitable conclusion of where you were at in that particular relationship. So,
right. Absolutely.
In terms of your divorce process, was it a long process? Did you have to do a lot of waiting? Or was it relatively quick when you actually sat down and began the legal process?
It was very quick. There was a filing. Once we filed, I can't even remember how long it took after we filed, for us to have the court date. Had the court date, went to the courthouse downtown. It was very quick and simple. There were no hang-ups, no issues, no problems. Mm-hmm. Because like I said, I didn't hate him. Yeah, we had a daughter, and I never wanted to keep him from her.
Yeah.
So anything he wanted with in retrospect to her, great. Yeah, fantastic. Not a problem. Make sure we're getting everything done for her, and you see her, I see her, and there's no problem.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely what I wanted, because of course, as someone who grew up without a dad, I'm like, I'm not about to put her through that. I know what I had to go through. I'm like, no, this is not going to happen this way.
Yeah.
And I know what women do to men now. Like, you look at what they do to these men who have kids and actually want to be in these kids' lives, and they just use the kids as pawns. I'm like, first of all, I'm not about to use him as a pawn because I don't want him back. I don't want him. So I need him to do everything that he wants to do, which is perfectly fine with me. I'm not about to use her as a pawn and say, oh, you can't do that. You can't see her because you didn't get, nope, none of that.
You're happy.
And a few of my friends. I was happy.
I was going to say, we're not going to say like, oh, you didn't want him back. We're going to say it in a very positive, affirming way. You're happy in your life.
In a way that, yes, I was happy and I wasn't about to. Some people or some women get divorces and they're like, I want him back and I'm going to do this because I'm going to keep the kid from him because I don't want him to do anything. No, I actually wanted him to be happy. I did want him to be happy. I genuinely did want him to be, and still do to this day, want him to be happy.
Yeah.
So like I said, our proceedings were quick, easy, to the point. There were no issues. I signed, he signed. I mean, the judge even made a joke in there. He was like, okay. He was like, you can't go get married today. And he looked at me. I'm cracking up. Like,
wow.
I don't know why I was so entertained by this judge. I mean, it was in a, you know, in a room. You're not in a whole courthouse. You're just in a room, little conference room.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just me, my ex, the judge, and a court officer or whatever. And the judge is signing the papers, asking any questions, and, you know, good to go. It was no problem. Bang, bang, look, bang, bang, boom, like the guy says on SBU. It was no problem. Like I said, we didn't have any issues, any hang-ups, no delays. It was very simple and very, very easy and very quick, let's put it that way. And I think it was that way because we had agreed and we had a plan typed out. We had agreed on what was going to happen as far as our daughter was concerned, and that was really it. That's the point. This is what we have together right now. We have a child.
Yeah.
This is why we need to continue to contact each other, because we have a child, and left it at that. And that was it.
Yeah. That's one of the things I will tell the audience too, is that depending on the municipality in which you get your divorce, you can expect different results. Like, now for me, it took me basically from the time I filed, it took about 60 days before I had my first appearance at the court. And assuming mm-hmm. if everything was perfectly fine when I took the paperwork up there, it would have gone through with no hiccups. But that didn't happen, and I can go into details about that. But basically, my county is very much pro marriage, so they make it extremely difficult to get a divorce if you're doing it just by simply submitting the paperwork, because they want people to cool down and take some time to think about it and decide if that's really what they want, which I can appreciate that. But it added to the agony, because if I could have done it out of anger, I would have probably preferred that instead of, you know, leaving the door open for trying to reconcile yet again with my ex-wife. And that's what made my process drag on, is that from the time I got the paperwork drafted until the time I actually filed it, it was about 9 months. So, I got the divorce drafted, but before it was finalized, I should say it was about 9 months. And in that time, it was just a lot of me and her going back and forth, trying to, me listening to her talk about how she still wants the marriage and yada, yada, yada. And, trying to figure it out. But at the end of the day, when I saw how adamant she was about not being married, then I had made peace with it, because I didn't want the divorce. But I kept trying to find a way in some way to make it work. But yeah, it just didn't. So my process took a lot longer than what most people describe theirs as taking, because it was complicated. The county I live in is, it's just different.
The county, right. They had different rules. And even with our divorce, of course, there was a class you have to take if you have a kid. You have to sit through it and things like that if you're getting a divorce. And I forgot what it's called, but I mean, just sitting in that class and like listening to what other people were going through and how people were fighting back and forth, like, well, she won't let me do this, and she won't let me do this, and I'm trying to do this, and she won't let me. I was like, oh my gosh. I'm just like, ooh, wow. And I'm just kind of sitting there like, yikes. Like, some people have it really, 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 really bad. Like, it was, I can imagine their divorce proceedings were a lot worse than ours.
Yeah.
I can imagine theirs were like that fighting back and forth type of situation. I can imagine that's what they had to go through. And to sit there and listen to it, I'm kind of like, they're kind of giving you these kind of rules and things like, well, you can't do this with the kid, you can't do this, and you can't do this. Me, in my head, I'm like, okay, that's common sense. That's common sense, too. Mm-hmm. That's common sense. That's dumb. Who would ever do that? But then you had somebody say something every time they said something. I'm like, really? Y'all are really having this many issues? I'm just like, wow.
Yep.
And you start to realize kind of what other people are really going through. You're like, oh, my God.
Yep.
I'm like, whoa. I'm like, y'all have it rough, like really bad. So it's definitely understandable how ours was quick and others, took a little bit longer because of what they were going through, their situation.
Yeah, there's two types of divorces for the listeners. And once again, I'm not advocating telling you guys this so that you go and get divorces. I'm just telling you this so in case you ever go and get a divorce because you find yourself in that situation, you've got the information. There's a contested divorce, and then there's an uncontested divorce.
Uncontested.
Mm-hmm. And the uncontested divorce is what Simone is describing, where you and your ex or soon to be ex sit down, you come up with a parenting plan if you've got children, you come up with a plan about how you're going to divide your assets that you have as community property is what you've amassed in the marriage together. And once you have that sorted out and you've declared all that stuff on the paperwork, you can take that agreement that you've reached, called a settlement agreement, to the judge, and the judge will review it. And if it meets all the criteria that the state requires, like, hey, you spelled out the custody plan for your children, you've determined who's going to get the house, the car, the dog, the fence, the cat, all of that stuff, you figured all that out, then they sign it and it becomes law. I mean, it becomes law. So the one thing about a divorce that people don't realize is that you're never really not married to that person from a legal standpoint. You're just have an agreement that says that you're going to operate this particular way as unmarried people to each other, if that makes sense. So you're not legally married, but you're not free from them completely, because you have a binding agreement, a contract between you and them that says this is how you're going to govern yourselves in the divorce. So meaning I won't claim that you're married to me when you're not, because we've gotten a divorce, that kind of stuff, you know.
Right. It's crazy how it's set up, too.
Yeah, there are some things in there that are hilarious, like, oh, I'm not going to talk bad about you, you know, and that kind of thing. Depending on what your paperwork says, which is why we don't use anybody's name on the Culture and Conversations podcast in case them people be listening. So,
right.
So let's move on, Simone, and talk about the healing process for you as we began to kind of head towards the home stretch with this. You know, after your divorce was final, when did you feel normal after all of that? Did you begin to feel normal? When did you begin to feel like yourself again?
When did I begin to feel normal? I think I felt normal before my divorce. And I know that's crazy to say, but I felt, and I don't want to use that word. That's not a positive word, but I felt almost like, you know, how in
you felt free.
I can exhale. Yeah, I wanted to say I felt free, but I'm like, I don't want to sound so bad. I felt free.
That's a good word.
I felt free at my 30th birthday. And like I said, I was still married at my 30th birthday, but it's almost like it kind of switched and clicked in my head. It's almost like that dial just kind of click two times. You know, you put the cap on the gas can, it clicks.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happened to me. It clicked. So I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to think a whole different way. I'm going to be a whole different person.
Mm.
I don't want to do this. I'm good. I'm happy with Simone. And we're good. Not a problem. So when I signed the paperwork, it was no problem. I mean, none at all. I signed the paperwork and left the office. And I told my manager when I got back in, because I went to the office that day. She was like, are you good? Are you okay? I said, yeah, I'm good. I said, I felt so great. I stopped by McDonald's and got a Big Mac. She was like, and you're on a diet. I said, yeah, I just wanted a Big Mac. I just felt like I wanted a Big Mac and I could eat a Big Mac because I was free. Now, that's another, like I said, a whole other situation involved in the marriage, but I could eat a Big Mac and be perfectly fine with no one saying anything about me eating a Big Mac. Let me put it that way.
So I got you.
That's how that Big Mac, I was like, I'm eating a Big Mac and nobody can tell me anything about it. And I'm good.
Wow.
So to me, that was I'm good. I'm fine. And like I said, later on, I was still good. I was still happy. I was still fine. I was still good. I was still happy. I was still fine. And like I said, I think it's almost like that everybody was expecting that breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd already had the breakdown. I was over the hump. Everybody else was still behind the hump or still at the top of the hill. I was down at the bottom of the hill like, okay, I'll see y'all later. I'm gone. It's like, wait, you're not going to come back and console us because you left it? No, I'm good. Y'all catch up with me or not catch up at all.
Exactly.
Type of situation.
Yeah.
So I was fine. I don't think he was. I really don't think he was, which is why I didn't want to, you know, I wasn't trying to put it out there like, hey, we got divorced. I didn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't put anything on my Facebook page. Nothing went on social media. A few of my friends knew. Even people at work didn't really notice. I stopped wearing my ring, my rings, but they really didn't notice until it took maybe some people. It took a year to realize. They were like, are you still married? I was like, no. I'm like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I'm like, please don't say you're so sorry. I was like, I'm fine.
Yeah.
I don't want you to be sorry for something that we ended. I said, I don't want you to be sorry for that. I said, because I'm not sorry for that. I don't regret being married. I definitely don't regret it. It was a great experience. And now we have a pretty good relationship. So I don't regret that.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess I just don't like when people say, oh, I'm so sorry. No, I don't need you to tell me you're so sorry because I'm not sorry right now. I'm not sorry. And I don't want you to still be in that, be behind me being sorry. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're not mourning. So, you're not still mourning your marriage.
Right, I'm not mourning it, so I don't want you to mourn it. I'm good. You see, I'm out living and doing anything all the time anyway. So I guess that's what bothered me more than anything, for people to say, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm like, no, there's no need to be sorry. I'm good. I'm happy. Like, we never knew. We're not supposed to.
Yeah, it's not your business.
That's not something that needs to be, right. That's not something that needs to be publicized. Even when people do these like huge, they're like, oh, I'm having a divorce party. Why?
Yeah, I never got that.
I'm still confused as to why people are there celebrating. Oh, I'm having a divorce party. I'm doing this. We're burning it. No, not burning anything. I'm not celebrating anything. No, it's something that ended, and I'm not happy that it ended, but I needed it to end for myself, or I would just be brought further and further down, and people would start to look at me like, where's Simone and who is that shell that's her walking around?
Yeah.
So it's, like I said, I really don't like when people do stuff like that. And like I said, I think the social media just, it was already going crazy anyways. And like there were speculations of what was going on in our marriage, and this whole group wanted to have a conversation about us and our marriage, and wow, we weren't even in the conversation. Wow. So it was a lot that went on. But like I said, either way, I was still good. I know a lot of people were talking about me. They were saying stuff about me behind my back, thinking I did this and I'd done this. And, mm-hmm, oh, she said this. And, oh, she was over here and she was doing this. And I know a lot of people were saying a lot of things. I know they were. I'm pretty sure they were. I'm sure even my friends just suspected, oh, she's doing this, she's doing this. Because I didn't give them everything. There may be a few people in my life that know everything that happened. And I can count them all on one hand. I literally can. Some of them I'm still friends with. Some of them I'm not.
Yeah.
But it's just something you don't want to publicize. And it's, you let the people talk about you the way they're going to talk about you, and you drop it. I see the same thing happening to people now when they get divorced and, mm-hmm, they go through divorces and our mutual friends, and they're, oh, well, I heard she did. I'm like, you know what? If really I went through this, and what y'all are doing to her is the same thing people did to me. Don't do it.
Yeah, you don't know.
Don't do it. You don't know what happened. You weren't in it.
No. And the truth be told, I mean, as one of your friends, I don't need to know, you know what I mean? I don't need to know the details because it's not my business, because what is me knowing going to help? And I think that's a common theme, right, also with these conversations I've had with people, you know, people around the divorce or around the marriage, they're not helping, you know,
they're not,
you know, I've got friends, and I thank God for my friends who really did offer me advice and perspective. But in, mm-hmm, terms of like fixing all the problems, nobody came into to the rescue to do that, you know? So I didn't feel like I needed to make it everybody's business. And with me being a member of a church, you know, I had to deal with that because I have a very visible position in the church. And, you know, people had questions. I had people walk up to me and, you know, some of it was fairly innocent, but some of it was, you know, damn near intrusive. I had people walk up like, hey, sorry, where's your wife at? And I'm like, you know, I keep saying, well, she's doing well, she's fine, she's just not here. And people kept asking, mm-hmm, well, where's your wife? Where's your wife? I'm like, okay, like, apparently you don't get it. Like, I don't feel like answering these questions, but, you know, because you're a sweet lady, I'm going to answer these, mm-hmm, questions. Anybody else would get told off at this point, but, you know.
Right.
So since you're like my grandma, I'm going to answer these questions and tell you what's going on. So just, you know, but I think to give people some perspective as we wrap up here is just that, you know, the healing process is very much individualistic. There's no magic bullet for it. So if you want to, you know, you want to heal after divorce, I think you got to be honest with yourself. Was there anything that you did in your healing process that you were like, yeah, that really help make a difference in you transitioning from being married, going through a divorce, to now being single again?
I took a hard look at myself and looked at what I did while I was married and what I didn't do when I was married. It was more about what I didn't do when I was married. It's like, you could have done this, and you could have done this better, and you could have done this better too. So it's not a thing of, okay, I'm going to blame the other person for everything that happened. Nope.
Sure.
Once I finally realized, okay, they weren't totally to blame, I did A through Z, mm-hmm, pretty much. They did Z through double V. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it was an equal type of situation, but once I started taking responsibility for what I did and realized what I did and what I could have done better, I was kind of like, okay, all right, now I know what to, you know, I know what I can do next time. I wasn't going to go backwards. But, mm-hmm, I did know, okay, you know what, you could have done this better. And you know what, next time you're going to do this a little differently. So, I mean, that helped me to heal and to move on and to be okay with being single. And, of course, having a deeper and actually understanding my relationship with God, mm-hmm, and knowing where I needed to be with him and knowing how to have a relationship with God. That's, people just don't get that. And I know people will see me and like, She has a relationship with God? Really?
I think you
is
have
that deep?
I think you have a relationship with God. I don't. Let me say that as right. Let me put on. Excuse me, as I put on my Sunday school teacher hat for a moment, and bless your relationship with God here. No, I think you do. I think if you're one of these superficial, fake Christians that right. I can't stand out there, and yes, I'm bringing the smoke to y'all fake Christians out there who I can't stand. Then I think you would look exactly. at somebody judgmental and be like, oh, she don't like, or he don't, or whatever. But no, I think you have a relationship with God, and just like your marriage, your relationship with God is between you and God. So,
right.
So yeah, continue that point. I'm sorry. Let me take the hat back off.
Yeah. No, I like I said, I've just built a deeper relationship with God and where I want to go and my walk and things like that.
Yeah.
And like I said, I'm not out here, you know, standing on the corner with a Bible walking up and down the street. But if anybody asks me, I'm definitely going to say it. Somebody says to me, well, have a blessed day. You have a blessed day as well. Thank you so much. God bless you. And I will say the same thing to them.
Yeah.
And that's how I am. And that's how I've started to develop, and I've started to change, and I've started to become me and starting to realize who I am. And it's almost like I'm like the song, I'm changing. I really am. It's a change, and it's not the same person I was. Yeah. And I'm good with not being that same person that I was. A lot of people don't understand it and they don't get it. But to me, it's like, it's not really your responsibility. It's not your duty to get me and how what's going on with me. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
So it's just a lot. I started going back to the church I went to before we left the church, because there was a before we left that church. So I started going back to that church again, building a relationship, and you know, understanding, you know, going to classes and listening to people minister and building, having a relationship with people who have that close relationship with God.
That's it.
So it's like, okay, you have a conversation with them. You're like, wow, me too. Wow, me too. And it's you having a general conversation and not, okay, let me quote this scripture. Let me quote this scripture. Let me quote this scripture. Because I don't know every scripture. I don't know half of them. I don't know 10% of them.
And you need context. You need to know how does this thing that you just said from memory apply to my situation, and how should I look at life because of this?
Amen.
You know, you need context.
And that's why my pastor put it in perspective for me. I was like, thank you for talking to me like a human being.
Exactly.
And not somebody who walks with the Bible underneath me
Robo
the whole time, because I don't, right, I can't, I just don't get it like that. So that's how I think I've been able to heal and, you know, move on and be good with myself. I mean, you know, been through a few relationships and just now be good as single me.
Yeah.
And just waiting. I'm like, you know what? When you're ready to drop him in my lap, I'll let you drop him in my lap.
Nice.
I'll run into him in the street. Maybe he'll run out in front of my car and I'll tap him a little bit. And be like, hey, what's your name? You know, praying doesn't like that happen. It's not gonna happen. But you know, it's just a being happy type of situation. Be happy within you and be happy that you're the person that you are, and just continue to ask God to open your eyes and keep you aware of what's going on around you so that you don't trip up or you don't fall into a situation where you're stuck. So, like I said, just doing that and continuing to work on me and, you know, hanging with my little boo, my daughter, and I mean, hey, my boo is my daughter. Let me make that correction. My boo is my daughter. My boo is my daughter.
I was about to say.
So, I mean, just, you know, having a relationship with her and, you know, trying to show her things and teach her things. And
yeah.
I mean, that's just life. That's how you move on. That's how you get through things, per se.
Yeah. I mean, there's no straight line to success in life. And,
no.
You know, and my father, Frank Smallwood, said it best. You know, I think he sat around and thought about life in terms of my, you know, situation, having been a divorcee. And my dad, you know, he's a bit of a philosopher at heart. So he looked at me one day at a cookout, I never forget. He said, because I was kind of telling him, I kind of said something that made him kind of raise an eyebrow about, I think I was expressing a certain degree of frustration with the whole idea of marriage and being in a relationship. And he was like, boy, you shouldn't even think about it like that. I was like, why? He's like, man, it happens. that was his grand conclusion of the matter. He's like, it happens. And when he said that, I said, damn, you got a good point there. You know, that's what I said about something. Like, damn, that's a real point. Like, what?
It does.
You know, and I think in the healing process, I mean, I want to be, obviously, informative to the audience. But I think if you hear anything out of all of these different stories that you hear people sharing on Culture and conversations about divorce and your story, Simone, is that they need to take away from it that things happen and you have the best of intentions. You go into a marriage thinking that, hey, things are going to work and you're going to live with this person for the rest of your life and you're going to just have this fairy tale that happens. And then life really happens. And whether or not we're honest about it, you see people who pretend like they got it all together. Everybody who's married is going through some degree of turmoil and trying to figure it out. And those who can figure it out, they stay married. Those who can't, they don't. And it's not that the people didn't want it to be married and stay married in all cases. It's just sometimes the only solution that was left to resolve the problem was to get a divorce. So, you know, as we wrap up, though, I will say this, Simone, about your faith and just, you know, where you're going in your walk. I definitely want to continue to encourage you to, you know, pursue your relationship with God. I think that's part of you. I think that's really commendable that after having been through so much and having, you know, expressed a certain amount of confusion about things, you were like, I'm going to go and learn about this relationship that I'm supposed to have with him. And, you know, it shows. I mean, you, I think you on some real level, you have a certain maturity and a certain, you know, beauty that's coming from a spiritual place that I can observe as I just watched you heal after all of the things you've been through that I know about or whatever. And, you know, so I just hope that you continue to, you know, definitely grow in that, because that's a beautiful thing, both on the outside and the inside, that when you're able to see somebody blossom in their faith. And so, you know, as somebody who's on the outside looking in as a friend and, you know, as somebody who cooks ribs from time to time that you may eat, I just want to encourage that, because it's a good thing. You know, it really is to see people growing. And I think there's no more beautiful thing in the world than a woman who has a relationship with God. And I think that's always an awesome thing to see people come into it. You wish it sometimes would happen without life circumstances being what they are, but
happen sooner, right?
Yeah, but you know, it, as long as it happens, I think that's always a good thing to take away from our trials and tribulations. So, yeah.
Right.
So,
I wish everything happens for a reason in the season. So it's a time for everything. That's just how I see life. It's a time for everything. No use in crying over spilled milk, and like your daddy said, happens. It does. Yeah,
it does.
It
really does.
And you have to think, you have to debate, okay, how am I going to deal with this? What road am I going to take to deal with this negative thing that just happened? I'm going to go down this horrible road and be upset and angry at everybody, or go down the other road and let God help me and heal me. And if anyone did do me wrong, let God deal with that type of situation. And that's the road I try. I believe that I try to take all the time, because I want to be a happy person. Like, I want to wake up every morning happy.
Mm-hmm.
I wake up every morning with a reason to be happy, no matter what has happened the night before.
Yeah.
I choose happiness. Yeah. I choose joy.
That's it. That's the word, joy. Yeah. The difference between happiness and joy in the Christian perspective is that happiness is a temporary thing. It comes and goes with our circumstances. But joy, to your point, is a choice. It's a deliberate effort that we make because we have this relationship with God. So, you know, I can be upset or not happy, but I can still have joy because I know that, you know, that there is something to live for, that there's purpose in my life. There's meaning.
Right.
So, I mean, yeah, I think.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I think if I'm going to wrap up all of these conversations that I've had about divorce, is that there is a light at the end of the journey. You're not alone if you feel hurt. You're not alone if you feel sad. You're going to have a lot of complex emotions and feelings. We've heard people talk about going to therapy. We've heard people sharing their experience about how they use their faith to cope with these things. But all in all, the healing process is unique to you. But at the end of the day, if you work through the work and you are willing to make the investment, you're going to heal. And yeah, Simone, thank you for sharing your story on Culture and Conversations.
Thank you for talking to me, and thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Simone Pitts, for stopping by and being so gracious to be part of the conversation. Hey, guys, that brings us to the end of another episode of Culture and Conversations. If you would like to interact with the show, you can do so on Facebook. Culture and Conversations is the Facebook page. Culture and Conversations is the Instagram handle. And if you want to send an email, cultureandconversations@gmail.com. Guys, we have a full slate of interviews coming up, and we are going to try to finish the year out strong. So I plan on publishing an episode going into the holidays once a week. So please, please, please continue to listen to Culture and Conversations. We're going to give you something to listen to around the Thanksgiving table. We're going to give you some stuff to unwrap presents to during the holiday season, during Christmas, and we're going to give you some stuff to rock out to going into the new year. And as my goddaughter would say,
my goddaddy made this.
That's right. I hope you guys are blessed. I hope you guys have a great week. And whenever you're listening to this, I hope everything gets a little bit better. Peace.